Blazer with Jimmy Engstrom.
The Azure DevOps Podcast is a show for developers and DevOps professionals shipping software using Microsoft technologies. Each show brings you hard-hitting interviews with industry experts, innovating better methods, and sharing success stories. Listen on to learn how to increase quality, ship quickly, and operate well. And now your host, Jeffrey Palermo.
Welcome to the show. I'm Jeffrey Palermo, your host, for helping you and your teams move fast, deliver quality, and to run your software with confidence in Azure, all while using everything the .NET ecosystem has to offer. And the podcast is sponsored by ClearMeasure, a software architecture company that empowers .NET teams to be self-sufficient and able to deliver world-class results. They are hiring architects and also .NET engineers who would like a path to become an architect. So you can go to clearmeasure.com/careers to learn more there. And then finally, be sure to check out the new video show, Architect Tips. And today on the show, we have as our guest, Jimmy Engstrom. He has been developing ever since he was 7 years old when he got his first computer. And he loves to be on the cutting edge of technology, trying new things. When he got wind of Blazer, he immediately realized the potential and adopted it already when it was in beta still. And he's been running Blazer in production since it was launched by Microsoft. He is the author of the book Web Development with Blazer, and he's also a co-host of the Coding After Work podcast that also has a stream. And his passion for the .NET industry and community has taken him around the world speaking about development. Microsoft has also recognized Jimmy by awarding him the MVP award, that's most Microsoft Most Valuable Professional Award, for the last 8 years in a row, and a whole host of other things that we just couldn't fit because we'd be reading it for the whole 30 minutes. But Jimmy, welcome to the show. How are you, sir?
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure. And by the way, congratulations on the book. You know, having a book out on Blazer when Blazer is so new, you were hard at work early.
Yeah, I was. It was a very interesting journey. This was my first book, and
nice.
Well, it was more work than I thought it would be, and it was also more fun than I thought it would be.
Well, now you were in Europe, and so lots of people over there heard you speak, and even lots of people in the States, and the video content you spoke at the .NET Conf, so those videos are available. But for those, you know, who are not familiar with your career and your body of work, can you kind of back up for us and tell us your story? What are the big points in your career that kind of led you to doing the work that you're doing today?
Well, if we go back all the way to the start, that was when I got my first computer.
When you were seven.
And I usually say that life is filled with defining moments and moments of realization. And I remember when I sat down with my first computer and I wrote 10, print Jimmy, 20, go to 10.
Mm-hmm.
And
Jimmy.
Exactly. And that was my code. And I got the computer to do stuff. And that was the moment when I realized that I wanted to become a developer. And I mean, we're talking about somewhere in the 80s, 80, what could it be, 87 or something like that. I mean, computers were not like they are today.
Right.
And my brother had a similar computer, or the same brand. So I had played around with computers and stuff like that, but that moment was so defining for me, because when I think back at it, I got my first computer and I didn't play a game. I started to code. Now, it took many years before I went through a Commodore 64. This was a ZX Spectrum. I went through Commodore 64. I got Commodore Amiga and all of that. But when I got a PC, and this was when I started learning to program in school as well, I kind of realized that this could be a potential way. I can make a living out of this.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always liked to solve problems. And that's what we do, right? We solve problems. We take away pain points and stuff like that. So I quite quickly realized that I had a lot of ideas, and having the skill set to actually be able to write code, I could use that skill set to help people with again, removing pain points, making their everyday a little bit simpler.
Yeah, you make a good point. You didn't play a game when you got it. You started writing code. It made me think about the different types of people in a lot of fields. Me and my kids, we like to do amateur off-road motorcycle racing. And in any motorcycle racing, you have the actual rider or driver, and then you have the mechanic. And different types of people are drawn to it. And so on the computer, you have people who use a computer for pleasure or for work, and they want to use a computer. They want it to work, the software, the hardware, the everything. And then there's those of us who see a computer and it's like, oh, I could make it do better things.
Yeah.
And if we were in, if we were in professional racing, we'd be the mechanic that's like, let me totally redesign this engine or this chassis to make it go faster next time.
That would totally be me.
Awesome. Well, when did you decide, you've been intrigued with different technologies, but when did you decide that it was not just, speaking of Blazor, not just an interesting technology for you to use, but you know what? I'm going to write a book about this.
Well, leading up to that, we did a lot of HoloLens, me and my wife, and it was a lot of Windows development and stuff like that. And I really loved that. It was fun, but it was also something that I did only on my spare time.
Mm.
So when Blazor came out, I tried it out and I realized that it solved basically everything I hate about web development.
Mm.
I don't like JavaScript. I don't like to code in JavaScript. I like C#.
Mm-hmm.
And imagine a world when you can create interactive websites without the use of JavaScript or TypeScript or anything like that. So I showed a colleague, so look at this, look at what you can do with Blazor. And we already had our CRM system and our customer portal written in, MVC in this case, ASP.NET MVC. And I showed him that how easy it was to just, with a couple of lines, I think it was like 5 places you need to add stuff to, and you can use Blazor together with MVC.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, he just stood there and looked at me, looked at the code, looked at me, and he said, yes, we are bringing this into production. This is what we're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
And this experience by working with it, this was fairly early on, and we had our site was up and running with Blazor long before it was released in by Microsoft, really. Mm-hmm. And suddenly I realized that I had like a year experience when people are trying to talk about this and release it into production.
Mm-hmm.
So why not share that knowledge in form of a book? And Pact, which is the publishing company, contacted me and asked, would you like to write a book? So I had the idea that it would be fun to write a book.
Mm-hmm.
But I also have a problem. I don't like to write a lot. I like to, I know how to make a point with a few words, basically. Mm-hmm. And that's not a good skill when writing a book. because the publishing company wants many pages, right?
Right.
But I think I found a way to leverage that together with writing a book. So there's not a lot of fluff, if you can call it that.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of right to the point. I'm doing a little bit of storytelling, of course, but usually it's pretty down to the point. And I think that skill, together with that experience I got running Blazer in production, was kind of, it felt like I could really do good by sharing it in the book form.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's tempting when you look online at how many books are available across every topic to think, man, everybody's writing books. But I did a calculation at one point. I looked at all the books that are written in a given year, and then I looked at populations, and I just swagged. It's not 1% that write books. It's not 1/10 of 1% that ever writes a book. It's 1/100 of 1% of the population that ever writes a book.
Wow.
So congratulations.
Thank you.
But well, let's dig into some of the things that you've learned, some of the things you said, everybody really needs to know this about Blazer. What does everybody need to know about it?
Oh, wow. It makes web development better. Okay, fair enough. It's mm-hmm. kind of... I assume that this is from person to person, but my experience is that if you don't like JavaScript, Blazer can solve that.
Mm-hmm.
If you really love C# and you want to have real C# errors in the UI or that you can read, then Blazer is your friend. But I chose to have a little bit of an other way of thinking about Blazer, because a lot of if you look at talks or books and stuff like that, people often talk about Blazer WebAssembly,
mm-hmm.
and they're talking about Blazer as if it was WebAssembly. But in our case, we went the other route. So Blazer Server was the first technology that was released.
Mm-hmm.
And let's say that you don't have the luxury to just do file new.
Well, very few people do.
Exactly. You already have a site. Might be ASP.NET, might mm-hmm. be something else. But we can, using Blazer Server, we can add Blazer to an already existing site.
Mm-hmm.
If you're using WebAssembly, that is not going to be the case. We basically need to do a file new. So my recommendation would be, don't wait to create a new site. If you want Blazer and you already have an existing site, use Blazer Server. And the really nice thing is that the difference between Blazer WebAssembly and Blazer Server, code-wise, is almost nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So we can have a shared library with all the components that we need. And when we want to go to WebAssembly, if we need to, we can, with basically no changes in the code.
So you said if you do WebAssembly, then you're doing file new. Dig into it a little bit, because a lot of people have said, hey, I've got an existing site, I can make, you know, this piece on the bottom left of the navigation be a little piece of Blazer.
Mm-hmm.
Are you saying that if it's Blazer WebAssembly, there's some difficulties there, but Blazer Server is easy? Or what are you? I want to make sure.
Yeah. So if you're already running ASP.NET for example in MVC or something mm-hmm. like that, you can just you still need to go to Razor Pages. I don't think you can run it on MVC. So you can take it to Razor Pages. So you mm-hmm. can have your existing site and just have just a small part render in Blazer.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can, like we did, we took one page, converted that to Blazor, took the next page, converted that to Blazor. And then we had pages that we kept with Razor Pages and then added Blazor, just Blazor components. But when it comes to Blazor WebAssembly, everything is running inside of your browser.
Mm-hmm.
So that you can't really use the server technology together with Blazor WebAssembly because that's running completely inside of the browser.
Mm-hmm.
So going from your existing site to Blazor server, super easy.
Mm-hmm.
Going all the way to WebAssembly, well, then you won't be able to leverage the code you already have or the pages that you already have. Then you basically need to rewrite everything into WebAssembly before, or Blazor, I should say, and run it in WebAssembly before you can leverage the new technology.
So it sounds like you're piece by piece morphing your existing application into Blazor server. And because all the code's running at the same place on the server, you're able to do that page by page and not as a big bang all at once.
Yes, and even control by control or component by component. We had pages that were a little bit Razor Pages, a little bit, what was the name of those? Web components, I believe. Web Razor components, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And Blazor together. So we were able to move piece by piece over to Blazor server.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And we don't have any plans to go to WebAssembly, at least not right now, because the server version works very well.
Yeah.
There are some up and downsides with both of these technologies. The biggest downside of Blazor server is that all the state lives on the server. So if you have many users, that is going to be a problem. We have a SignalR connection from the client to the server. Again, if you have many users, that is going to be a problem. Might not be a problem because you can scale up and all of that, but still, the amount of memory on the server, the demand for memory increases.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Now, the nice thing is that our MVC site didn't have any APIs. Mm. So we were talking, our MVP site, MVC site, were talking directly to the database. That can be true for Blazor server as well.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need any APIs. That is could be an upside. Now, we can talk about architecture and all of that. And I know that many people I've talked to says that, well, we need an API layer anyways. Sure, that is not going to be a problem, but you don't need one.
Mm-hmm.
So our existing site didn't have an API. Our new Blazor site didn't need an API.
Mm-hmm.
Now with WebAssembly, we need an API because everything is running on the server, sorry, on the client, and we need to go back and get that data.
Many thanks to our podcast sponsor, Clear Measure. Clear Measure is a software architecture company that empowers clients' development teams to be self-sufficient, moving fast, delivering quality, and running their systems with confidence. Whether starting a new project or developing new technologies or techniques, Clear Measure sets up your team to deliver world-class results. Learn more at www.clearmeasure.com. Clear Measure, empowering software delivery.
You know, there was a... when you said some people are saying, oh, you need an API layer regardless of what your architecture is, just as if it's a best practice, I'm reminded of the dot-com boom in 1999, and then even going up to 2001. Within the Microsoft technologies, there was huge popularity with active server pages, ASP, on top of COM+ components that then talked to a SQL Server database. A lot of times stored procedures were really popular back then. And it was an assumption that, oh, well, we really want to use these complex components because there's a lot of intelligence. And so, and we're just going to have active server pages talk to the complex components. That was an API layer. Now, the channel of the API was binary communication instead of JSON over HTTP, but it was still a network hop. Now, you could host the comm components locally, but they didn't have to be on the same server. And so it was common for, you know, the web farm to farm out multiple servers, but then go to maybe a single app servers or app server or two app servers. And the whole industry learned that that was actually not a good architecture to voluntarily add a network hop if you didn't need one. And so saying, oh, everybody, every time we needed an API layer in every case, but just assume that that API layer is going to be a network hop, I think that might be setting us up for the same lesson that we learned over 20 years ago.
That's the exact same thing, the same conclusion we came to. I mean, we do have an API, but it that just means that we have a contract.
Yeah,
in process, right? Exactly.
Yeah, in process.
So we're saying we have a DLL in this case, a NuGet package that has that contract, and whatever we are calling on the backside of that doesn't matter because we have that contract. And the same thing goes for a web API. Well, you still have a contract, but you don't need to think about security in the same way because you don't have to secure an API because the server knows if you're logged in or not when you choose the other route. So there's a lot of complexity that kind of disappears by doing that.
Mm-hmm. Do you find, has your team found some Blazor components that you've really loved using? Or
We use Telerik for many things. When we started off using components, when we started using Blazor, I should say, we found that since we were very early on, there wasn't a lot of grid components with a lot of
true.
I work at a bank, so we got a lot of data, a lot of grids, and they're basically looking the same way in many cases. So we ended up building our own.
Okay.
So I have something called blazom.net, so blazm.net. And it's a play of words because the company that my wife and I are running is called Awesome Dev, so A-Z-M Dev. So it's a play on words for Blazor and Awesome, so Blazom. And also we can say, it will make your applications blossom.
Nice.
Yeah, I like puns. I have a problem like that. So we ended up building our own grid component because even though Telerik is an amazing component suite and we use them for basically everything else, the grid was, we found that we were coming back to doing the same thing over and over again. The grid, the Telerik grid could do all the things, but it was a little bit tricky in the beginning. So we started rolling our own. We started to build our own grid and adding like features like format, for example. We wanted to format money, for example. That should be an easy task.
Yeah.
We had, if the value was positive, we wanted the blue color. If the value was negative, we wanted a red color. We wanted this to be built in into the component. So there's a lot of kind of a detailed view or one of the first features that we had to build was for our mobile application or our mobile web, because we wanted to make sure that if we had a big screen, we wanted all 10 columns to be shown, for example. And if we made the screen smaller, we would remove fields or columns depending on the size of the screen. So a lot of those types of things we built into that component or that grid. Now, that's the only component that we built ourselves, basically. We have a little smaller like a section helping us around, but everything else, we really didn't need to build anything up by ourselves.
Mm-hmm. You're right about the components, the UI components being slim pickings whenever, you know, it was that first year server side just came out, WebAssembly wasn't yet released. And I remember, was it Sync Fusion was early to release some stuff because they had their JavaScript controls and they kind of just packaged those up and then started developing as well. I think Infragistics was a little bit later because they said, no, we need to take some more time to get our stuff, you know, like the way they wanted it to. And have you used any of the Radson controls by any chance? Because those are free.
I've tested them. And I really don't have any, bad things to say. We went with Telerik because we wanted someone to blame, basically.
Yeah,
they have excellent support, so we chose to we wanted to have someone we could talk to and get support if we needed it.
Mm-hmm. Got it. Well. What, so you adopted it when, even before .NET 5 came out, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Absolutely. So .NET 3, .NET Core 3, 3.1, that time frame. Yeah. What have you found are the big changes or differences as you came through, you know, .NET 5 and now to .NET 6?
It has become simpler.
Okay.
There's a lot of things for every release, there's an easier way to do it. With .NET 6, there's a lot of things that you had to build workarounds for. So let's what some of my top things is top level statements, so that you can write the startup clause for our web application without actually having to have a clause.
Mm-hmm.
That I really love. The co-located JavaScript files, so you can have the JavaScript files together with the component file, the Razor file, and you can even have the CSS files together. So everything is in the same location in the solution tree.
Mm-hmm.
Those are some of my favorite things. Minimal APIs in .NET 6 has helped a lot. I wasn't sure about minimal APIs because it sounds like this is the minimal thing you can do or the minimal things you need, but that's really not the case. It has all the features with less code and super nice to use.
Mm-hmm.
And looking at Blazor, we found that in many cases, probably all cases, but I'm not going to go to say all. So in many cases, it was easier to rewrite the feature completely in Blazor rather than fixing the problem in MVC.
Mm.
It's just easier. And it's kind of like, now I'm kind of going to swear in the church. There's a Swedish expression saying that you shouldn't swear in the church.
Well, which is true.
Yeah, that's true, definitely. But Blazor is kind of the best of web forms and MVC together.
Mm-hmm.
So everything that it was good in web forms, everything that was good in MVC, we're getting that together. Everything that is good with JavaScript and with interactive web application, we're getting that as well. So everything baked into one. You can hear I'm a little bit passionate about this.
I'm with you. We've had a number of guests of Blazor on the show, and yeah, it's the next generation of .NET applications.
Yeah.
Now, what did you find was any differences or gotchas as you kind of integrated the Blazor application into your DevOps environment, anything with building, with different layers of testing, with deployment, with monitoring?
No, not really. We had a couple of issues where since we're using Blazor Server, we had a lot of users. We don't have a lot of employees, but we had a bunch of people pressing F5, mm-hmm. so reloading the whole page.
Yeah.
And what happens is that you're losing the state, you're reconnecting a new SignalR connection, you're keeping the old state on the server, and kind of you're getting two connections. The old connection is going to stay there for, I think it's 3 minutes.
Yeah.
And, well, the memory consumption just skyrocketed.
Gotcha.
So the main problems that we have seen from our user's perspective is that things are too fast. So I clicked the button, nothing happened. Well, something did happen. We just didn't tell you that it did. So we're used to a world where the page is going to reload and the users know that, okay, it reloaded, it did something.
Mm-hmm.
But now with Blazor, we press the button, nothing happens, but it really does. So that's one learning. You really have to inform the user that something happened.
Mm. So this is back to the mouse busy cursors or something
kind
like
of,
that?
Yeah, we usually do some kind of text saying that this got saved or something mm-hmm. like that. But yeah, it's a very nice problem to have. The site is too fast.
Mm-hmm.
And when it comes to deployment and all of that, well, we already did all the deployment with Azure DevOps in our case. That works just as easy.
Mm-hmm.
It, really no issues at all. We did run it for a while on Linux, but we chose to go back to Windows because that we know Windows.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't have the know-how when it comes to Linux, so mm-hmm. it kind of makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. There's, I mean, if you think about it, operating system, that's a big word. You think, oh yeah, it'll just work on Linux. And you know what? There's probably a whole lot of apps that's the case. But if you have a really broad application, then you know, with compatibility with technologies that go back how many years, you know. Every single one of those dependencies needs to work perfectly in Linux as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, well, we've talked about your book, Web Development with Blazor. We'll include a link in the show notes with that. But where can people find you?
I'm on Twitter, Engstrom Jimmy, for example. Mm-hmm. I have a blog, engstromjimmy.com. And of course, there are always welcome over to codingafterwork.com. We do streams. We try to do streams every week. I think we're going to have a little bit of a holiday break now.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, there's a lot of Blazor going on there. And whatever people want to see. And we bring in guests as well. So
awesome.
That's a good place.
Yeah, if you're not subscribed, listeners, to the Coding After Work podcast and stream, codingafterwork.com. Because, I mean, really, we code after work, too, for fun.
Yeah. That's how it's got started, because all the developer that code after work, but mm-hmm. don't have that. Many consultancy companies has that, what are called, R&Ds, R&D evenings.
Mm-hmm.
But if you work at a bank like me, the company has something else. They're doing something else. They're doing bank business, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And but they're not doing development in the same sense. So we wanted to start. We started off as a user group trying to be that space,
mm-hmm.
be that R&D evenings. And then we continue with the podcast. And then, well, then the pandemic hit. And, well, why not do it on a stream?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, the nature of local user groups has certainly changed, hasn't it?
Yeah.
So,
sadly, I must say.
It'll come back around.
Yeah, I hope so.
The Dev Intersection Conference happened in Las Vegas over in the U.S. A Norwegian Developers Conference is happening all over Europe, I've heard now. They've got it on mm-hmm. their schedule, right?
Yeah, it was. I think it was the week before Devin's section.
Okay. Awesome. Well, hey, Jimmy, thanks for coming on the podcast and sharing your world of Blazor and your book, Web Development with Blazor. And I know I won't ask yet if you're planning on doing a sequel or another one, because you need to rest a little bit after that experience.
I don't tell anyone, but I am doing another one.
All right. Well, we won't tell anyone. Wink, wink. Awesome. Well, thanks so much for coming on the show, and we'll include your Twitter and all your links in the show notes so people can find you pretty easy. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. And until next time, keep shipping.
You've been listening to the Azure DevOps Podcast, a show for developers and DevOps professionals shipping software using Microsoft technologies. Go to www.azuredevops.show for show notes and other episodes. On behalf of your host, Jeffrey Palermo, and our sponsors, thanks for listening, and may God bless you.